Hello and welcome to Scriptmate, the podcast for writers who dream of seeing their words spoken by paid actors on some sort of screen. I'm your host, Tim Schulberger, writer and founder of Write LA, a script coaching and screenplay competition site I'll talk more about later. Joining me is the highly skilled and wildly opinionated Tony Giambuso.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Tony.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you, Tim?
Good. This is our first episode, so we're getting the hang of this.
Mm-hmm.
So coming up in this, our very first episode, we will discuss the pros and cons of writing an outline and why there are really no cons. We'll pick a movie or TV moment that works and one that definitely doesn't. I'll answer random questions from our audience, and I will give Tony a little insight into something he's about to care passionately about, Australian film and TV trivia, because that's where my accent is from, in case you're wondering, mate. But first, before all that, we begin every episode with a segment we like to call What's On Your Mind? So, Tony, what's on your mind?
All right, well, this weekend I saw a re-release of the 2014 movie Interstellar.
Oh, no.
I saw it. Oh, no, exactly. No, I love Interstellar. I saw it in IMAX at the Chinese Theater to a packed house.
Okay.
And seeing that paired with seeing Wicked last month gave me this idea of this, what I'll call like a capital M movie, like a real old school movie where whether you like it or not, you go into the theater, you are, you know, it's loud, it's fast, it's colorful, it's funny, it's scary, it's emotional, and it's just a movie that's like jumping off the screen. So I think of Wicked, I think of Interstellar, and I think—
Can I add Twisters?
Twisters?
And I thought Twisters this summer was exactly a summer movie.
Yeah.
It was what summer movies are supposed to be.
Yeah, Twisters. I mean, I think like Titanic is sort of a perfect example of that. It's everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of this trailer I watched for the movie Miracle on 34th Street, 1947 movie. And I rewatched the trailer this morning. And the trailer is a studio executive watching the movie Miracle on 34th Street. And he's crying, and then he's laughing, and then the movie ends, and he stands up, and he's like, I got it, boys. I know how we're going to sell this movie. And he says, that's the best movie I've ever made. And he says, we got to get it across to the public. It has everything. It's hilarious. It's tender. It's romantic. It's charming. It's delightful. It's groovy. And I thought, like, yeah, that is not every movie needs to be that intense, but you know, leaving Interstellar, I see the moments you said, oh no, that people feel like, oh, is this too earnest? Is this too saccharine? Is this too emotional? And there's no way to leave that movie after seeing it in the theater not just feeling like, oh, I just went to the movie.
I just saw a movie.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are you thinking about? You're thinking about that movie, but you're thinking about how there aren't enough of these movies? Or there should be more?
I feel like there's still, if anything, it's almost like that's all that we have now. We don't have the other movies that support that, or the movies that are a little bit less earnest or a little bit more cynical. They're a little bit using comedy to sort of undercut the drama. They're afraid that they're going to get made fun of.
Okay.
And I think of a movie like Interstellar that is just so unafraid of being made fun of, or Titanic, where it's just extremely earnest, extremely emotional and saccharine and sentimental in moments. But there's no way to not get swept up in it when you're actually in the theater watching the movie with a crowd of people.
That's fair. I think it's interesting too, because we've gotten into an era now where we're starting to make movies to launch franchises,
mm-hmm.
which I feel like the movie makers or the studios are losing sight of. We have to make this movie entertaining or we don't have a franchise. It's more like, well, we're going to assume you're going to like this because we're launching all these characters and we're going to make 17 films after mm-hmm. this. And I know Marvel has suffered from that. Every time they've tried to launch a new direction, it's failed because the launch has been so focused on the next movie.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't really made this movie entertaining, like you're saying, like a full-on movie experience. So, all right, well, hopefully we'll see more of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's on your mind?
Yeah. I'm thinking about something completely different. I'm actually thinking about education, just to be really interesting and exciting. I have twin 15-year-old girls who are in 10th grade, so education is obviously front and center right now. But what was interesting was I was talking to them about subjects or blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, it's not really about the particular subjects. School is sort of teaching you, hopefully, a lifelong lesson on how to learn and to be curious about things and how to focus your attention and do these sort of things. And so I thought that kind of applies to writing, because I feel sometimes, especially, you know, you and I do a lot of reading of scripts. I run the Write LA competition. I read most of the scripts. You read a lot of the scripts as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them nowadays seem to be based on other scripts. So, or characters are based on other characters. And so it's like, the more you can kind of go out there and see things, learn things, be curious about things, the more I think it informs your writing in a positive way. That's what I've been thinking about. It's like, cause you know, I like to go on road trips and meet different people mm-hmm. and see different things. Because I think we have a tendency sometimes to forget that we are on a lifelong journey of education. And the more we can kind of see things and do things, the more I think we improve as writers and we become stronger. So I've been thinking about that.
It's like teaching you how to learn, teaching you how to be curious. And I feel like learning how to write is sort of learning how to be curious, yeah. learning how to listen.
Because, you know, writers get that rep of like, oh, they spend all day at home and it's just them and the cat or the bottle of whiskey or whatever. But I mean, Hemingway is a good example. Suicide aside, mm-hmm. I mean, he fought wars. Mm-hmm. I mean, he went off and went big game fishing and did all sorts of random things. So I think that makes you a stronger writer. And I think writers sometimes feel that they have to be sitting by the laptop all the time or they're not writing or they're not becoming better writers. And I think that's what I've been thinking about. It's like, no, I think it's a real balance where it's like you're supposed to be living life as well so that you can also inform your writing and then inform and entertain us.
I have a lot to say about that. I think we should hold it for a larger topic.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Because we could burn this whole segment on it. But I agree.
All right. Great. All right. Well, we'll move on because we don't have time to talk about this. So we'll dedicate another podcast to what? Living and writing. Is that what we do?
Yeah, the balance between living and writing and life experience and all that.
Sure.
Yeah.
But for now, we're not going to do that. We're going to talk about our topic of today, which is outlines.
Outlines.
And how many people listening to this are instantly going, ugh, outlines?
Yeah.
Which I know is not necessarily the most sexy topic to start a podcast with, but it is, I would argue, the most important mm-hmm. topic to discuss if you are a writer who does not have a whole bunch of money in the bank and a whole bunch of successful credits. So, that's another topic I want to discuss too, how lessons from experienced writers may be crap.
We might have to do more than one episode.
We may have to. Because I think some of the advice you get from experienced writers is crap. So, and one of those is sometimes a writer will be like, oh, I don't have to write all the time or I don't need an outline. I just sort of go with it. Although I don't hear too much, I don't have to have an outline because I think anybody who's written anything understands that you need mm-hmm. one. So let me explain why I think outlines are important.
Please.
And then you can explain why you either agree or disagree with me.
Yeah.
I read, I don't know, what, probably 300-400 scripts a year. So I reckon I can tell within about 10 pages if someone has written an outline. And I know that sounds like I'm, you know, just talking out of my butt, but it's actually true because you can get a sense that the writer knows where this thing's going very early on in the script. And you can likewise, you can tell that a writer may not know where this is going mm-hmm. very early on in a script. And so outlines, I will argue to anybody, are incredibly crucial because, look, the simplest argument I say to people, and I'm going to say it here, and I said it in my book, which, by the way, you can buy mm-hmm. on Amazon. It's called The Audience and You. An architect does not show up to an empty lot. Let's say there's an empty lot. Architect's been hired to build a building. He or she does not walk up on day one of construction where all of the construction people are there and say, I reckon a bathroom over there, maybe two stories, let's give it a go and see what happens. You know, it just doesn't happen. No, and if they did, they would not be an architect that was very successful.
No.
So why do writers feel that screenplays are in some way different from that, where they're just going to sit down at the typewriter and it's like, I've got my coffee or, you know, I've got my weekend and I've got my dog sitting there and this is everything I want. Let's just bash away and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And once they finish bashing away and see what happens, they say, this is gold. Now let's make this into a movie. And it's not gold. It's not going to be gold at all. It's going to be quite rough. So an outline is important because it's the opportunity for you to really have a think about what film you want to write, what story you want to tell, who your characters are, who you want them to be, how you want them to evolve during the course of this script, because they have to evolve emotionally. So who they are at the beginning versus who they are at the end, and then scenes along the way that are going to contribute to that. And trying to make that up on the fly or remember it as you go never works. It leads to a meandering script that takes weird tangents. It leads to characters who are inconsistent, who may start as one thing, but then all of a sudden they're doing something else. It leads to story that can really lack a sense of organic nature to it, where it's just like a writer's like, oh, I want this scene, and then let's put this scene in, and then let's put this one in, and then you just end up with, in Australia they call it a dog's breakfast. It's just okay. Have you heard that one?
No.
Oh, okay.
Is that the Australian thing you wanted to teach me today?
No. But no, it leads to a dog's breakfast, which is just like a mess. So, and also, outlines are really good because you get a chance to explore all of your crazy batshit ideas on whatever way that you do an outline versus having to write a complete draft. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting there is one way to do an outline, that you can choose whatever you want, you know, index cards, writing on a wall in your own blood for all I care. Sure. I mean, it doesn't matter. Or I handwrite in a notebook and I go to a coffee shop and I will just sit there for 2 hours and noodle things out. And so do it in a process. So it allows you to make mistakes and course correct without having built an entire house. So I just believe outlines are super important. They're certainly even more important when you're learning the craft, when you haven't written that many screenplays or any. If you don't have a plan, it is a mess. Now, you can tell me what the counter, what people say who are like, I don't want to write an outline.
Well, I don't think there's necessarily a strong counter argument, but I do think that one of the hardest parts, you know, I'm sure we'll get a lot of questions as, how do you motivate yourself to write? How do you breakthrough writer's block and all of those classic questions. And part of it is they're imagining a complete outline in their head. Oh, I don't have the complete outline. I don't know what all the characters are going to do. I don't know how it's all going to end up. So they go, well, I can't start my outline yet, but I can't start my meandering script yet either, because Tim told me not to do that either. So they're sort of caught in this stasis where they don't do anything. So my way where I approach outlines is sort of like a pre-outline. It's the first like 4 or 5 questions I ask myself, which is kind of the classic questions. Who is your character? What do they want? What are they willing to do to get it? What's standing in their way? And then broadly, you know, what is this story about for me? Why am I writing this story? And none of these, especially that last one, don't necessarily need to be explicitly stated in your script. Like, this is a script about self-esteem, and my self-esteem is low and now it's high. But that's just sort of my guiding principle for the script. So when I have those questions answered, I then move on and I think, okay, who is the character at the beginning and who is the character at the end?
Right.
And once I figure those broad things out, I kind of have my first scene and my last scene, sort of. And I then just, like you said, you go to the coffee shop with the notebook, and I just start thinking, okay, I know the answers to these questions now. And then scenes start coming to my head. So I go, oh, that's a cool scene. Let's play that out. Oh, that's a cool scene. And then you just start writing out like ideas for scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, he goes to the coffee shop and he meets a, you know, pretty girl. And then you just do that over and over until you start to have a bunch of scenes. And I tend to ask myself questions. So I go in and I'll say, you know.
Well, just go back on the first. Your fifth question was, why am I writing this? Is that what it was?
It was more like, what is this about? What is this about for me?
Okay.
And it can be, what is this about in terms of what is this script itself actually about? This script is about, you know, like I said, self-esteem or self-love or regret. But it also can be, what is it about for me? Am I trying to work through some ideas about regret? And so then sometimes I even write that guiding principle on a post-it or something. And so that when I'm in the weeds, you know, weeks, months later on the script, and I'm figuring out, wait, I moved this scene, I put that here, I changed this, I cut that character, I can return to that and say, what is this actually about? And it can congeal sort of the whole script instead of it feeling like, oh, I feel like the first third of the script was written in one mood and the last third was written after a bunch of notes that I got that kind of took me away from what I wanted to do. And so I start building the outline that way, and I ask questions. I say, you know, well, okay, if this is what the character wants, then what could be something that's standing in his or her way, or what might a job or what might his relationship with his or her parents be based on this want and those needs and all of those things. Mm-hmm. And then I start kind of building and building. And that's where I'm like kind of free writing. I'm just sort of like filling up pages on my notes app or you in your notebook. And then that's when we start to put together the outline. Now, I guess the debate or the difference for a lot of people is sort of the degree of their outline.
Sure.
Some people say, oh, I write a 30-page outline, super detailed, scene by scene. I'm on a different camp. I write a much looser outline.
Yes.
Where I know my beginning, middle, and end. I know where the character is starting. I know where they're ending up. I know what they want. But I still need to allow myself the sort of mobility of writing a draft that isn't so constrained by like a beat-by-beat outline, because that's where I kind of figure out my character's voices.
Right. I tend to have a one line per scene, like a basically just the scene heading once I've nutted everything out. So then when I'm going, because for me, the process, once I get to the script, it's sort of the relaxing process because I'm just writing dialogue and I happen to enjoy writing dialogue. Mm-hmm. But all I have is this sort of little roadmap that I can refer to, which is each scene, mm-hmm. where it takes place and who's in it. And then a little note about what's the goal of that scene? What information we're imparting? Mm-hmm. What new information? So that I can just sort of refer to that rather than slogging through 30 pages of stuff when I'm trying to write the actual draft. But one of the arguments I hear, one of the few arguments I hear in criticism of outlines, which is something I think you mentioned there and we can touch on, is this idea that it robs me of my creativity. Mm-hmm. Like it makes it more difficult for me to change direction if I have an idea while I'm writing the draft. Or I get all my inspiration out on this boring outline, so it takes away the fun of writing the actual draft because all my flashes of inspiration are on this dull thing, mm-hmm. not on this vibrant, energetic thing. So why would I waste my creativity on an outline? Do you want to answer that one first?
Well, yeah, I'll touch on that. And it's sort of like a side answer, which is the oftentimes that outline feels like a dull document because you haven't answered the questions that I mentioned before, where people think of outlines as what is happening. And I've read so many outlines. I mean, I've done it myself, or treatments from people where they say, we open on this and then this happens and then this happens and then this is the big climax and then this and then this. And I say, well, okay, this is a movie. Like, these are scenes of a movie. It's rising and falling of all the beats of a movie. Mm-hmm. But I don't really know why is your character doing this other than you needed to put them through this. And so sometimes it's even just the writing of an outline is putting someone in the mindset of, I'm supposed to write a boring document where it goes from point A to point B to point C to point D, as opposed to thinking of it more from the ground up of, or the inside out of saying, like, this is supposed to be a character's journey. What is the character going through? And maybe your outline won't be as technical or as boring or uninspiring to you if you're actually just following a character and then everything else is just playing out that character's journey.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that, perhaps I shouldn't agree so we can argue more.
Yeah, disagree.
But yeah. No, outlines are for garbage. No, I agree. But I also think that you also have room for change. Like, mm-hmm. the idea that the outline is locked in and then the draft has to follow it is not right. I've spent weeks on an outline, gotten 10 pages into the draft and be like, oh, there's a fundamental problem here that I didn't address.
Didn't see it.
Mm-hmm. And this whole thing is trash. Mm-hmm. Got to start again. So the outline is really just to sort of get you going and you can change and you can remodel a scene and you can go back to the outline like, well, this isn't working or I've changed my mind or, oh. And also once characters start talking to one another, new stuff can emerge.
It's like, it always does.
Oh, I didn't realize that character was as angry as she is once she got into the room with this person. This messes everything up. How mm-hmm. am I going to sort of now use this information to make a stronger outline and a stronger script? So all that stuff, it's an extra step in the process, but it's a really crucial one when you are learning the craft. I'm speaking because I feel like we've talked outlines to death and we need to move on. But if you have your own question, by the way, if you're listening to this and you have a follow-up question to outline, please send it to us and we will address it in a future episode. Did you have a final word on an outline?
Yeah, one final word, and that's, you touched on it in the opening of this, which was, you write your, if you don't have an outline, sometimes you write your draft and then it's difficult for you to go back and change it because you've already written it. You've gotten to a fade out. You're so excited. And even though you know, you know, intellectually, okay, I'm going to have to probably re-outline this. I'm going to have to remove scenes. I'm going to have to switch things. But it's really hard to get out of that. So,
oh, yes. So, well, we're going to discuss that in a later episode.
Okay. Yes. So just you got to just fight through that desire to say, no, it's good. I'm done. It's like, no, you might have to, I mean, if it's the house, you might have to disassemble the house
and
put it back together.
Yes.
And it will get you whether you do it in the second draft or if it's draft 10 and you go, damn it. All right. I should have done it 8 drafts ago, but I got to do it now.
And then you get notes from me and they're so good. You're like, damn it. Tim was right. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a whole, that's another conversation. Great. Falling in love with your first draft is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And it does get in the way, which is another reason for outlines because it's really hard to not fall in love with your first draft. So we will discuss that later on. Okay. Outlines. Good. Moving on to movie moments or TV moments. Where we will pick one moment we think works in a movie, one moment we think doesn't work in a movie. Both are instructive for writing. Would you like to? You can lead off.
I'm going to lead off. All right. So mine isn't specifically a moment. So I'm starting this off.
Great. Yeah. great segment. Great.
But it's more of an idea in a movie. I'm trying to decide which one I want to talk about. So I'm going to go with Stallone and Cliffhanger, the movie Cliffhanger.
Okay.
Which I love the movie Cliffhanger.
Okay.
It's very good. He climbs a lot of cliffs and,
and
he
hangs from it.
But his character in that movie has been discussed before, and that his character actually has no actual flaws. Mm. The whole movie is predicated on this idea that his, I think it's Michael Rooker, his, climbing buddy. They're like, you know, rangers that help people if they get stuck in the mountain and all that. And Michael Rooker took his own fiance up, who's not a trained climber. She like hurts her ankle or he hurts his ankle and then they get stuck and they have to come and save them. And it's the opening scene of the movie. It's a very famous scene. And Stallone comes out to save her and she falls to her death. And the whole sort of character is Stallone's character is built on this guilt, and his friend is like angry with him. But there's actually no guilt. He didn't actually do anything wrong. He didn't make a mistake. He wasn't late. He didn't take it less seriously. His friend was wrong. So Stallone would have trauma from this situation, from watching this woman die. But there's scenes, you know, when he leaves, then he returns, and they're like, you're back. And he's like, I just couldn't come back here. All the guilt. They're like, it's not your fault. And he's like, but it was. And you're just like, the movie is good. So whatever happened worked. But I feel like it could have been even better and even more fondly remembered if it's those things that you can't really put your finger on, but you're like, I'm not really super invested in this character's wound because it just doesn't feel like a wound. It's like the person saying like, what are your flaws? And you're like, I work too hard. I care too much. Right. And you're just like,
I love too deeply.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just sort of felt like, well, the movie needs him to have a flaw. We need him to have a wound, but we don't want him to have any responsibility for this woman dying. I think if this movie were made now, or maybe with an actor with a little bit less of I need to be like purely the hero, they would have figured out a way to make it a little bit more nuanced where maybe it was 20% his fault. Right. If only I had blank, if only I had got there sooner, if only I had not had that, you know, glass of Prosecco before I went out or something. It's like this central conflict of this entire character is not, we just have to gloss over the fact that it's not even real.
All right. So watch Cliffhanger and look at how you can give your characters more actual like flaws.
But it's a really good movie, so I recommend it.
Great. Which leads me to actually mine, which is Brockmire, which is a TV show that was on IFC, is now on Amazon Prime. I think you can get it. It's Hank Azaria. It's from a sketch that was on YouTube. Brockmire is a baseball announcer whose wife cheats on him and he has a meltdown in the booth during a game, goes off for 10 years. The series starts where he's lured back to call a minor league baseball team. And he's a, you know, functioning alcoholic. He's been in Asia for the last 10 years doing all sorts of drugs, hookers and everything. He's a deeply flawed character, and Amanda Peet plays the owner. She's deeply flawed as well. And the pilot is just brilliant. Mm-hmm. In a way that it introduces these characters. They're all rough around the edges, but they're all unique in their own people, and you can see them sort of emerging in the pilot. And it shows you the sort of direction it's willing to go and how dark it's willing to get in the name of humor. I won't give away stuff, but there was a bit in the middle where I was like, oh, I'm really into this. And then it took a turn, a super dark turn. And I was like, okay, yeah, this, you've sold me. Mm. So Hank Azaria does an amazing job. Amanda Peet does an amazing job. The kid who plays the producer does an amazing job. Everybody. Structurally, it's sound. It sets you up. If you want to have a look at a pilot, I recommend you looking at Brockmire just from the way that it just establishes characters that you want to kind of see what happens with them, because they're this ragtag team of flawed misfits, but you kind of, you know, you root for them. And Hank Azaria it's probably the finest work he's done. So Brockmire, check it out.
I've seen it, that pilot.
Oh,
it's very good. That's the one too. And I don't know, I'm pretty sure it's in the pilot and it's also in the promo for it, where it's his breakdown.
Yes.
Over the,
yes, you know, that was the original sketch, was his breakdown.
That was, okay, so that's what
it
was.
And then they built it into it's the opening of the show, and you're like, oh my God.
It's so great though, because in 2 minutes, but using the rules of the world, he's an announcer of a sporting event.
Exactly.
And so it makes sense. And it's Hank Azaria, he's got the voice, he's got all of that. And you basically understand almost everything about this character, the tone of the show, the depth of the show, but also the humor of the show in like a 2 minute breakdown.
Exactly. So watch Brockmire. Sorry, I'm speeding up because we're running out of time.
Let's do it.
Okay. Question time.
Okay.
Questions from you guys. And by the way, you can send more. I guess you can send them to me at my email, which is tim@right-la.com if you have a question. tim@right-la.com.
All right, so this question is from Michi, and the question is, you've read so many scripts,
yes,
and I'm sure that many of them are, quote, so close yet so far. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's a gap where maybe the story is amazing but was poorly executed, or maybe it was so well structured but the characters were really shallow. Can you talk about some specific heartbreaking, quote, gaps where the script would have been amazing if only ...
I can. I don't want to get into, you know, individual scripts because I don't think that's fair. But I've definitely read every single season of Write LA, screenplay competition open for entries now, that I read. I read several scripts. Sorry, I'll just grab some water. I read several scripts where I'm like, yeah, and then it can be the first 30 pages, you're like, yeah, this person really knows what's going on. And then it sort of slowly dissolves in front of you as you're reading it. It's like, okay, they had the beginning, but they didn't have the end. Or they ran out of patience. Or they ran out of, like, they didn't want to sort of stick it through to really figure out how this thing ends. They just sort of started to cobble things together. You can feel, like, their energy wanes. Like, and again, it's like, well, did they write an outline, or are they sort of losing interest, or did they lose interest in the sort of finishing the draft? I'm not quite sure, but you can feel the energy. I read sometimes scripts where you can tell what they're really passionate about, and it can sometimes overwhelm the script, where it's like, oh, if you just got off your soapbox, you've actually got something here, but you're trying to lecture us rather than let us reach the conclusion that we should reach. Sometimes a character, they're really passionate about a character, but they bury that character because you can sort of feel, well, that's where this script is really speaking to you, but you're covering it up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just were bold enough to dig into this character and dig into these emotions and this feeling, you would have a much stronger script. So yeah, I see this all the time. And there's often, it's often character-based. It's rarely story-based. It's rarely like, mm-hmm, oh, I was really onto this. Oh, what have you done now? Story-wise, yeesh. It's usually characters. It's like, oh, they're starting to make decisions that don't make sense, or they're not. You're not digging as deep into what you could have gone to. So I'm not connecting. I'm finding myself hanging back a little bit. So see it all the time. And I would probably, the only advice I would say is like, finish the drill. Really dig in. And mm-hmm, if you're feeling uncomfortable about a script, you're on the right track, and you should keep digging.
Well, it feels like characters should be driving plot, not plot driving characters. And that ties into the outline question as well, which is you write an outline that's very specific and you get a character to a certain point, and then now that you're writing, you realize, I don't think she would make that decision anymore, but it's in my outline, so I have to do it.
Yeah.
And then the reader will always they'll always go, well, the 45 pages you wrote before this, the character that's in them, she would not make this decision. I don't believe it. And then I start to I start to lose a little bit. And then if that happens again and again and again, I find myself saying, okay, I feel like the writer is pulling the strings here.
Yes.
No, of course they are, but I want to at least feel like the characters are the ones that are having agency or their decisions are sort of pushing the story forward.
Definitely. And I certainly read a lot of, and I say it a lot in my feedback where it's like, this feels like you're starting to do things to characters because you want them to, and not because it's an organic or a natural progression of how they're feeling or what their choices are. That they're not making logical choices. They're making choices based on the writer needs them to make them so he or she can move the script into a different point. Okay, next.
Oh, I think that's it. I think we're just doing the one question, right?
Are we?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I mean, we're running out of time, right?
We'll
ask a question next episode.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe we'll ask two.
Yeah.
Because we got a few. Thank you. Please send them in. We'll try and be quicker. Okay. So that just leaves the Australian trivia and the goodbye.
Yeah.
Australian trivia. There's a film I want you to watch.
Okay.
I want everybody to watch. It's called Starstruck.
Okay.
It was made in 1982. I believe it's on Amazon Prime. I haven't actually paid to look. It was made in 82. It was directed by Gillian Armstrong. She made she launched onto the international scene with My Brilliant Career, starring Judy Davis. Mm-hmm. And it was a very dramatic film about relationships. And then she followed up with Starstruck, which is this wacky 1982 musical, songs all written, or mostly written by Tim Finn, who was the brother of Neil Finn, the founder of Crowded House. And Tim Finn was a singer-songwriter on his own.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing little microcosm of what Australia was like in that sort of weird, over-the-top 1982 sensibility. Visually, it looks amazing. It's a cute little story about just this woman and her cousin who have to save the pub that's under the Harbour Bridge from being destroyed by developers, so they have to enter a talent show in order to win it. So it's pretty basic.
Yeah.
But lots of cute songs. Really interesting to see a director who was really desperate to not pigeonhole herself early on in her career because she'd made this heavy drama. She wanted to do something completely out of the box. It did okay at the box office. It then sort of vanished for a long time. It's now around. It's one of those Australian films that really deserves more attention than it got, and certainly over time has become a more interesting film when you look at it from the context of, you know, time capsule.
Yeah.
So Starstruck, Amazon Prime, watch it.
I'll check it out. We'll talk about it.
Or we won't. And that's it. That's all the time we have for our first podcast. So thank you very much for listening. Scriptmate is brought to you by Write LA, which I've been mentioning constantly. It's a website where you can get all sorts of information about writing, learn about my script consulting services, because I do script consulting for you if you want me to, and get all the details for our annual screenplay competition, Write LA, which is now open for entries. Basically, we give three writers a chance to be read by literary managers. We're giving out $500 cash this time. You get a copy of Final Draft, the screenplay software. Thank you, Final Draft. You get online webinars to Script Magazine. You also get a notebook and a pen from Decomposition Books. So there are some prizes. It's worth entering. But why enter Write LA is the question I get a lot. Why we can talk about screenplay competitions in the future. But for me, before I answer that question, just a tip, if you are deciding to enter a competition, and I do believe that you should, screenplay competitions are really important just to get your words out there. But if you want to get yourself slightly ahead of the pack, there's a couple of things to think about. Most importantly is really focus on trying to get your reader and your audience to feel something. The more we feel as readers, the more connected we are with our characters, the more successful your script will be for us, and the better it will do in screenplay competitions. That matters more than what you're doing with your plot. It just does. Mm-hmm. Everybody I've ever spoken to in the industry says, I would rather feel things than have a perfectly constructed script. So if you can focus on that, you're putting yourself ahead of the game. The other thing I want to say is please don't worry about too many typos or whether or not you've got your name on the cover page or that kind of stuff. We don't really care about that. If it's chock full of typos and you haven't bothered to spell check, then yes, that's a problem because it just tells us that you don't really care. But otherwise, if you've done the due diligence like normal people do, please don't worry about it. I know writers get stressed about that. So I would argue work on the feeling. And then if you want to enter our competition, go to write-la.com. You can get all the details there. We're open until March 4th, and both Tony and I look forward to reading your scripts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. That's the end of the shameless promotion. So thank you very much for listening. We're very grateful. We'll be back more with very soon. We'll be back soon with more. I'll start that again. We'll have another podcast.
We'll do our best.
Until then,
we'll see ourselves out.
Say goodbye, Tony.
Goodbye, Tony.